Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Vanished. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
The case we're going to talk about today was a suggestion from a listener, and wow, it was such a good suggestion. It's a fascinating, unsolved case that was the largest in Oregon history, one that involves murder plots, sects, science fairs, and endangered frogs. Today on Ghost Town, the mysterious disappearance of Kyron Horman. Kyron Richard Horman was born on September 9, 2002, to Desiree Young and Kane Horman, an engineer for Intel. The couple divorced before Kyron was born, and so he moved in with his father, Kane. His mother, Desiree, gave up custody of both of her children to go to Canada to receive medical treatment. That's a whole other kind of detailed thing. It's not really germane to this story, so we won't have to go into that too much. All this to say that Kyron grew up in a blended family. His father, Kane, his father's girlfriend, an elementary school teacher named Terry Moulton, and her son all lived together. Okay. So eventually, Desiree Young returned to Oregon and didn't want to upset Kyron's new family dynamic, though she remained an active and involved parent. In 2007, Kane and Terry got married and gave birth to a daughter. So if you're still following me, we have Kane, we have Kyron, we have Terry, we have Terry's older son, and their new daughter together. Soon after that, Desiree married a detective named Tony Young. I feel like I have to explain this family dynamic with a chalkboard of some sort. I don't know. Anyway, it's been said that Kyron greatly admired his stepdad and wanted to be a detective like him when he grew up. So, four of Kyron's parents, Kane and Terry, Desiree and Tony, were actively involved in Kyron's life. Especially Terry, who became especially involved as an educator when Kyron started kindergarten. She'd volunteer at his school and worked closely with him and his teachers, supporting his math education and even teaching him some sign language, as Terry herself was partially deaf. Eventually, Kyron enrolled in Skyline Elementary School. On June 4th, 2010, Skyline Elementary School held a science fair from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. 7-year-old Kyron did a project on red-eyed tree frogs for the fair, which he had been working on with his stepmom, Terry. Usually, Terry would walk Kyron to the bus stop every morning, but that day she took him to school because of the stuff he needed to bring to the fair. To really understand the case, you have to start examining what happened on the morning of June 4th and onward, minute by minute almost, hour by hour. There's this really incredible Redditor that goes through the timeline of the events of the whole case with citations. It's such a great resource for this episode. You can DM us for the link. We've used that, plus other case write-ups, plus other copious amounts of information that are out there to piece together the events that transpired, on and around June 4th, 2010. So the morning, June 4th, before school, Kyron talked to his father and told him how excited he was about his project. Around 8 a.m., Terry took Kyron and his little sister to Skyline Elementary. They went to Kyron's classroom first to drop off his jacket and backpack, which were left at his desk when he disappeared. Next, Terry took a photo of him next to his project and next to his deskmate with his project, who also was doing his science fair project on red-eyed tree frogs. Maybe together, I couldn't figure out that specifically. I'm going to show you this photo, and this photo is kind of iconic in the case. It's become the primary visual when you talk about Kyron Horman, all of the events surrounding the case, etc. So this is a photo that was taken minutes before he disappeared. It seems pretty, you know, normal, right? Happy, even. What are your impressions of the photo?
It seems like a photo that was taken in an environment where there'd be a lot of people, a lot of eyes on people. Mm. So anything kind of going awry minutes after this photo was taken, just by looking at it, seems odd.
Yeah. it's a little boy. He's cute. He seems happy. He's in a CSI shirt. He's next to his project. It's really like very normal and very sweet. And like you said, it's in a really crowded place at a school science fair in, you know, the beginning of the fair when everyone's getting set up and getting ready. And you know, these kids are really excited, I would presume, and really, you know, energetic about presenting their findings. It's so crazy to me to think that minutes after this kid would be gone. And I think it's really haunting too when people use this photo because of, yeah, how different the events would go, how different things would end up from when that photo was taken.
Usually you'd have to, you know, sometimes, I mean, usually in, it's sometimes in cases where you have to find a photo, like, hey, what's mm-hmm. the most recent photo you have in proximity to when the incident happened? But very seldom was like, we have one from minutes before or, you know, shortly before.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would encourage you to take a look at it. It really does color this whole case. So after this photo was taken, Terry told Kyren's teacher that they were going to look at other exhibits. So the family, Terry, Kyren, and her daughter, then stopped by the library to return some books and walked around the school. Before returning to class, Kyren wanted to stop by and visit his kindergarten/first grade teacher, so they did. After that, school was getting started, the fair was kind of wrapping up. So Kyren headed to class, but Terry and her baby did not accompany him, as the baby and the diaper bag were getting heavy from all of the walking around. Terry said goodbye to Kyren, he waved at her, and then he trotted off towards his classroom down the hall. In later interviews, Terry said she would regret not walking her stepson to the room for the rest of her life. That afternoon, Kyren was not on the 3:30 p.m. school bus as planned. When Terry called the school, she discovered that his teacher had actually marked him absent that day, despite, you know, having his stuff there, being present, seeing people, and they would call the police. The official search for Kyren Horman began at 4:33 p.m., The family was at the school back looking for him. The police got involved, and together they pieced together the events from Terry's perspective. Terry's statements to the police indicate that she left the school around 8:45 a.m. Again, not 10 a.m., but middle of the science fair, hitting two different Fred Meyer grocery stores to fill a specific prescription for medication for her daughter's earache. At the second Fred Meyer, she runs into a woman named Andrea, an employee at Terry's gym. Terry shows her pics of Kyren, presumably the science fair pic. Both women confirm this meeting. It is, again, confirmed both parties. After getting the medicine around 10:10 a.m., Terry drives around to try and soothe her kid's earache, stopping at a dry cleaner's and a craft store before going to work out. The gym had childcare, by the way, and then going home. So by 1:21 p.m., she was home and had taken to Facebook, posting photos of Kyren at the science fair, along with photos of her daughter, her family, other happenings of the week. Eventually, her husband Kane gets home, and the whole family waits at the bus stop for Kyren, but he never comes home. At first, Kane and Terry weren't particularly concerned. They thought maybe there was a misunderstanding, as Kyren was dropped off at school. Maybe he thought he'd be picked up too. The bus driver called the school and talked to the secretary to let her know Kyren wasn't on the bus, and his parents were coming to the school to get him. But when the school secretary discovered Kyren was marked absent from class, Kane and Terry pick up the pace over to Skyline Elementary. After the Hormans arrive at Skyline Elementary, all of them, secretary, family, call 911, and the secretary calls Desiree, Kyren's biological mom, to tell her what was going on, while Terry and Kane run around the school asking employees if they know anything. Now, a lot of people say this is a sticking point, as why didn't Terry or Kane call Desiree, you know, Kyren's mother. They say it's because they were looking around frantically for their child, but it's kind of a sticking point with some people in this case. At 5:30 p.m., a rapid broadcast message was sent out to all parents of Portland public school students, alerting them that a student named Kyren Horman did not arrive home after school. That evening, Multnomah County Sheriff's Office alerted the FBI of Kyren's disappearance, and the next week, the Sheriff's Office held multiple press conferences about the state of the investigation. Still, people began wondering where Kyren's family stood in all of this, because they refused to talk to the media. Not just one set of parents, not just three of them, whatever, all of them, the extended family, nobody in this family would talk to press. According to the Reddit post on the case, the only remarks anyone had seen at the time that came directly from a member of Kyren's family was on Terry's public Facebook page, where she was asking people if they'd help pass out flyers. The family's silence was also a sticking point with people. It was such a strange part of the case and something that so many of public people who were interested in the case and stoked so much public interest that the FBI actually issued a statement about that. So what are your thoughts about them staying silent? What does that mean to you? Did you flag that at all?
You know, it's as an outsider, I would think like, well, silent is the last thing you'd want to be, but I don't know how people feel, or, you know, I don't know how they are processing things. And maybe they don't want to say, I don't know, the thing of like not wanting to say anything, but then also is like, why? Afraid to say something and maybe it'd be maybe they'd say something and it might be misconstrued, but then that makes it a flag too. There's just a lot of, you'd think you're like, you'd want to use your voice, you know, in 2010, you know, like as loud as you possibly could. And two, just essentially two sets of parents in a way, not saying anything, which is statistically even stranger.
Yeah. Like when I think about missing persons cases, especially missing children, I think about parents tearfully speaking out, really desperately asking anyone if they know anything. And again, I don't know. I can't possibly imagine what this family had gone through. It's horrible. It's horrific. But that is what I have in my head versus like, what would it mean to stay silent? Again, you're dealing with devastating circumstances, or are you trying to confer with your family? What, are you in solidarity for some reason? Again, I can't know, but I can understand how people would be confused by it.
Also, time is of the essence, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, usually, I mean, I'm not an expert, but in these things, like, you know, these initial, you know, minutes, hours, days are the most crucial. So you'd probably want to put the most into those.
Absolutely. On June 9th, an FBI spokesperson responded to the mounting suspicion around the family silence. People were not happy with it. They said that the Horman family wasn't doing media interviews because they didn't believe it was in the best interest of finding Kyren. This didn't help the narrative that was forming. And what is the best interest? So the narrative that was forming, really, was that Terry was somehow involved, and maybe the entire family. So on June 11th, more than a week after Kyren's disappearance, the Horman family finally did speak out. In a press conference, all four parents were wearing t-shirts displaying Kyren's missing persons poster, but interestingly, only the men spoke. Tony Young, Kyren's stepdad, read a letter directly to Kyren, while Kane Horman thanked everyone for their hard work and urged any witnesses to come forward. The press conference also got a lot of heat, as it put even more suspicion on Terry, though for some reason not Desiree, because she didn't speak out. Neither of them did. Also made people kind of angry at Kane Horman, because Tony was the only one who talked directly to Kyren, which to me, beyond what they decided to do in that moment, shows just how, what the expectations of people who are witnessing these types of media moments expect, you know, like what they expect from them, like what they expect from the women, what they expect from the men, what they expect from the biological parents, the step parents, which is such a treacherous place to be because you're not even taking into account the amount of trauma that these people are going through. It's almost impossible, honestly, to win in a situation like this. And you're not, obviously. The search for Kyren Horman became the largest and most expensive search effort in Oregon history. It involved all of Skyline Elementary staff, students, parents, neighbors, experts. Everyone got involved to find this poor, sweet boy. Interviews were conducted by over 50 detectives and FBI agents. Nearly 2,000 volunteers were involved in the search, which centered around a 2-mile radius around Skyline Elementary and on Sovie Island, approximately 6 miles away. Law enforcement at the time did not disclose their reasons for searching the island, but we'll get there, I promise. Oh, also, the school had no security cameras, which is, of course, unsettling. Again, it was 2010. It could kind of go either way. In any case, it was expensive, expansive, and an inspiring thing to see people come together. And actually, at a certain point, PD had to request that people stop donating food and water to volunteers because they had received so much. A reward for $25,000 was offered to anyone with information on the case, a sum that would eventually rise to $50,000 approximately 1 month later. On June 18th, 2 weeks after Kyren went missing, a flyer featuring Kyren, Terry, and Kane's white Ford F-250 truck was distributed. To quell the controversy around family involvement, the sheriff's department stated Terry Horman was not a suspect. They were just looking for anyone who had seen them that morning. But in reality, the police were actively investigating a new wild lead, one that would place Terry Horman at the top of the suspect list for the disappearance of her stepson, Kyren Horman. More after this break. During the first weeks of the investigation into 7-year-old Kyren Horman's disappearance, suspicion was squarely placed on the Horman family, and specifically Terry Horman, Kyren's stepmother, the individual who had last seen the boy, who had last taken him to school, and who also, according to the perception of the public, behaved strangely during their public outreach about the case. The Horman family all agreed to take polygraph tests during the course of the investigation, and everybody passed but Terry, who failed two separate polygraph examinations regarding Kyren's disappearance and walked out of another one. Terry was reportedly very angry about her results, very frustrated, also stating that the test that she had walked out of, the examiner wasn't taking her test seriously and that she couldn't quite hear as she was deaf in one ear. So what do you make of all of this information that we're kind of centering on Terry?
Terry's the last one to see Kyren.
Yes, she's the one who dropped him off at school.
It just seems like a lot of things. Who is the last person to see him? And it's their narrative that is saying what happened, what unfolded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
According to me, here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not other people, other witnesses saying, yeah, I know, I saw.
Well, there was a witness. There was a gym, yeah, her friend from the gym who saw her. It was her story was corroborated in a lot of different ways, but there were points in time where it would be impossible, like when she was kind of, well, not impossible, but when she was driving, you know, you're not going to remember seeing her car.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, you know, you want to say like, what is the Occam's razor, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what you do when you're an investigator, right? You say, who is the last person to see this child? It makes sense that you would focus on that person because they were the last point of contact, right? Now, it's really, again, it's so heartbreaking because it seems like Terry was really involved in this child's life. And when you think about different motives, which we'll talk about later, like,
I think a lot of responsibility to being like the last person, like, oh, if I only did this, if I only did that. So that's probably putting a lot of, you know, strain, emotionally, physically.
It's horrible. And there's no right way to grieve and to deal with such a traumatizing and devastating event, which, you know, you want to have grace for people in the face of this gigantic investigation, you know, a historic investigation for Oregon. So I feel for this woman. And I also, I'm just like looking at these things. And I'm like, I'm frustrated myself, you know? Checking the whole family's cell phones, investigators also noticed that in the days following Kyren's disappearance on June 4th, 2010, Terry Horman's phone pinged off a tower near Sovi Island, a random area 6 miles away. So that's why they were searching that place initially when they had found her phone records. Of course, that caught the investigators' attention. And then in June of 2010, during the searches and the polygraphs, another wild allegation appeared that would solidify Terry Horman's guilt for the general public, saying that, not in a court of law. Kane was reportedly told by investigators that 5 months before Kyren's disappearance, Terry had offered their landscaper, Rodolfo Sanchez, a quote, lot of money to kill him. According to Sanchez, he and Terry were having an affair, as Kane Horman was mentally and physically abusing Terry, according to Sanchez. The two had a, quote, meeting at a restaurant where she told him she wanted him to kill Kane and to end her pain and protect their daughter. Terry asked Sanchez to make it look like a mugging gone wrong, and his payment would be the $10,000 Kane carried on him at all times. Again, this meeting happened, according to Sanchez, 5 months before Kyren went missing. And sounds to me to be, I mean, wild. Like, I didn't see that coming. Also, who carries $10,000 on them at all times?
Like, me.
You do? You okay?
No,
okay,
I
okay.
carry at least eight.
Okay, just for like,
in case I want to just
some,
like
some fun money.
Yeah, just in case I want to buy something.
Oh, okay, like a scooter.
Yeah, or you know, like a private jet.
Oh, just like an hour to a jet, some Cristal, just because if you want to, just treat yourself. Well, it sounds great. I mean, again, I didn't see that coming when I was doing research. It sounds crazy. It sounds kind of made up, but also, like, again, given all of the things that were happening, of course you have to take it into account in some way. Investigators convinced Sanchez to confront Terry while wearing an audio surveillance device, but they were unable to obtain any evidence and could not make an arrest. Later, Terry would deny any involvement with Sanchez, saying she had hired the landscaper to do yard work on their 15-acre property, secretly paying him to help her older 15-year-old son, you remember him, who was tasked to clear up the yard. So she didn't tell Kane about paying this guy, and she did it with her own money, to kind of let her son take credit for this yard work, this arrangement. Are you following me? Again, it sounds convoluted.
And that's her biological.
That's her biological son that moved in with the Horman family. So again, it's weird. It makes sense when you explain it to me, but also, like, it's not sitting right with me. Terry said that on Mother's Day 2010, Sanchez came to the house wearing cologne and started hitting on her, and she said she felt afraid and unsafe. So Sanchez is saying one thing, Terry is saying another thing. Of course, none of this helped the Kyron Horman case at all, or the lives of the people embroiled in it. On June 28th, Kane Horman filed for divorce and obtained a restraining order against Terry and custody of their daughter. The divorce and custody was granted, though eventually Terry was given supervised visitation with her daughter. Again, very sad, very heartbreaking. On June 28th, 2010, the murder-for-hire plot was picked up by local news stations and, of course, spread like wildfire. Many of Terry's friends abandoned her, but one did not, a woman named Dee Dee Spincher, who was one of Terry's gym buddies, who eventually went to stay with Terry during all of this. There was also another friend, she remains unnamed in court documents, who came to see Terry. In late July or early August, Dee Dee and the unnamed friend bought burner phones for the three of them. Dee Dee's was activated in her name, but the other two were activated under fake names. They did this apparently because investigators were monitoring their phones. When law enforcement found out about the burner phones, let's just say they were not happy, and of course, it looks so bad. Both friends had solid, verified alibis on the day of the science fair, so they were not suspects. And so did Terry, whose day was, at most points, corroborated with people who had saw her. But it's weird. You don't get a burner phone if you're totally innocent. When you hear burner phone, you're not like, these people.
Listen, if I wanted to introduce you to somebody and I'm like, listen, they have a restraining order filed against them and they have burner phones. Mm-hmm. Would you like to meet them? Would you be like, that sounds like a kind of sus person to meet?
Yeah.
Just given that information.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that very much so. I would be a little scared.
Would the kind of person that would get a restraining order put again? Listen, people probably get restraining orders that are, it's not justified or whatever, because retaliatory or it's, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. But it just, the kind of person who fails or walks out a polygraph test, has burner phones, has had a restraining order against him, and was lucky to get supervised visits, is that the kind of person that could be involved in something that has gone wrong? Maybe.
Maybe. And also, that being said, can you be an unstable person and not abduct a child?
Yes.
Yes. True. True. But it's a lot of information that is coming at us full force, and it's a lot to process. And I would say most people don't get embroiled in a lot of these things together, much less one of these things at all in their lives. So a lot is going on. On July 22nd, Desiree and Kane told the Oregonian that the Dee Dee person, Terry's friend, was hampering the investigation, but according to law enforcement, Dee Dee was, quote, extremely cooperative and allowed a search of her property and car, as well as enduring 3 hours of questioning from detectives. Yet after that, Terry's new lawyer advised her to cut all communication with Dee Dee Spincher and the unnamed friend, and by all accounts, Terry did. In August 2010, it was announced that law enforcement were searching for an individual allegedly seen by two witnesses sitting inside Terry's truck, which had lingered outside Skyline Elementary by the soccer field the day of Kyron's disappearance. Bruce McCain, a former sheriff for the county sheriff's office, told CBS News, quote, "The identity of that second person, if he or she existed, could be critical in determining what happened to Kyron after 9 a.m. on June 4th. So we've got this car that was Terry's car, although it was in her husband's name at the time. And we have a second person that was seen with this car. Again, all of these things, maddening, crazy points of information. But then, after law enforcement issued the flyer showing staged photos of the truck by the field, a groundskeeper came forward. He said he didn't see a white truck that morning at all. This was obviously weird for two reasons. One, law enforcement had a reason to believe the truck was there longer and not where it belonged for just a drop-off, you know, from somebody, from some tip. And two, they had interviewed so many people on this case. They forgot this groundskeeper guy who was there. So now we have, okay, are the police and the investigators negligent somehow, which is also making all of this seem weird and making Terry more implicated than she should be. So, of course, it's a big mess. And it gets even crazier, if you can believe it. So after Kyren's disappearance, one of Kane's old high school friends named Michael Cook showed up to help with the search. Kane, Michael, and Terry all say that this is the first time Michael and Terry had met, that they did not know each other before Kyren's disappearance. But at this point, Michael gets super involved in finding Kyren. After Kane filed for divorce from Terry, for some reason, Terry and Michael start texting. And then they start sexting. You can find these texts between Terry Horman, now the police's prime suspect, and her soon-to-be ex-husband's high school friend Michael Cook's texts online. And let's just say, they're as horrible and weird as you might think.
So, and when, well, I mean, I don't, you know the exact timeline, but it seems like relatively short. So you're like, my stepson is missing. I'm pretty distraught. I muster enough energy to sext with my now ex-husband's high school friend.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. Just want to be
you
clear.
Like her? You're like, okay. You just, yeah, just be very clear. The word schwing was used in the sex, but I have to bring that up. I have to. That's illegal if I don't. You want to see the text? You want to see the sex?
No, I don't know.
they're online if you are curious. If you want to color this case even more, if you want any more information than this information dump.
But it is a kind of, like, it is interesting because, you know, I feel like I, in that short amount of time, if it was 20 years, you know, whatever, or a time later, I wouldn't be like, I'm a suspect in this and I'm very distraught because I feel like I'm very responsible. But I can text Schwing.
You can text Schwing.
With my ex-husband's high school friend that I just met. Also, doesn't seem like a great friend.
No,
great,
I mean,
friend.
I just feel it's
the
weird.
Dynamics are very dupe. Like the
yes.
Family dynamics are just
wild.
Families are complicated. Relationships are complicated. Not everything is, you know, whatever, linear or whatever. But this one is especially.
This is wild. Yeah. This is insane. Again, it's like I crave more information now, but I have so much information already. It's like I don't even know what I would do with more information. It's wild. Even one of these things is wild in a family situation, much less like 14 things. So then the case starts moving through the courts. In early August 2010, Tony Young, Kane Horman, and the Skyline Elementary School principal were subpoenaed and testified during the case's grand jury hearing. In December 2010, it was reported by the Oregonian that the grand jury had yet to provide compelling evidence yielding a potential indictment. So that stopped any progress. By November 29th, 2010, search efforts in Kyren's case had cost an estimated $1.4 million, according to county commissioners, and yielded over 4,000 tips. But it didn't end there. On June 1st, 2012, Tony Young filed a civil lawsuit against Terry, claiming that she was responsible for the disappearance of Kyren. The lawsuit attempted to prove that Terry had kidnapped Kyren on the day he disappeared. Young sought $10 million in damages, but eventually dropped the lawsuit against Terry so as not to interfere with the ongoing police investigation. And the investigation, in conjunction with the courts, wore on. In May 2017, it was reported by Portland station KGW that a secret grand jury panel was continuing to hear evidence in Kyren's disappearance and had convened on multiple occasions on the case. During the report, Kyren's case was described as still active and ongoing. 2 months later, in July 2017, law enforcement conducted further searches along Skyline Boulevard, but the searches yielded no results. To this day, Kyren Horman has yet to be found. So, what happened to Kyren Horman? Who did this? Now, I know what you're thinking. I've given you a lot of information here, and a lot of it points to one person. But I have to also say there are many theories about this, about what happened to him.
So it's just, so I'm clear, and maybe, you know, the listener wants to be more clear.
Sure.
There, what would have to have happened is Terry would have to say, okay, you're going to go to your class, bye. You're going to walk down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So what could have happened is a stranger just in that short thing just scooped him up and said, you know, you're being kidnapped. Or did somebody, I would imagine, have to be, somebody would have to lead him in the direction that he wasn't supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have to be someone that he either knew or had a connection to somebody he knew. Like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm a friend of your stepmom's. That would have to be, logically would be the thing, instead of somebody just grabbing a child in a public place and just, under their, put him in a sack and then just went out to, a parking lot and got in a car and drove away. All that has to happen.
Yeah.
It's not like he disappeared in the walls.
Yeah.
And you'd think, like, what's the least resistance? The least resistance is like, hey, I'm a friend of your mom. You know, classic. Yeah. I'm a friend of your mom's, a friend of your dad's.
Sure.
We have to go. Your real mom is sick, or your brother is sick, whatever. That person would have to have, at least pretend to have a connection to the family, or actually have a connection for it to be like, oh, I remember you from blank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is where my mind goes.
Absolutely.
Other than that, like, what is just like literally vanishing? Like, other than that.
Yeah. No. And people's minds are going everywhere. So, of course, a theory, let's just cut to the first theory that kind of people are talking about, a stranger, right? A stranger comes in. People on Reddit are really convinced that a stranger came in during a crowded science fair and basically was looking for a kid, saw a mom with a small child leave a kid behind, and are like, oh my God, that kid is not in class yet.
Perfect timing, though.
Perfect timing.
It's got to be so, to be a crowded place, to be looking around, mm-hmm. to have that be your goal and be like, oh, what a jackpot for that, all those things to happen.
Yes. Well, also, a Redditor, and I can't confirm this, said that the science fair was advertised a bunch for people to come in and see what the kids have done, which, again, it feels a little late to be doing that in 2010 with, like, stranger danger stuff, but that it was widely advertised. It's a small community. Like, come, it's a community effort. But you're right. The timing would have to be very slim on that bracket of time where the kid was alone and the mother couldn't see him and no one else could.
And he was reported absent from the class,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Not hours.
Yeah.
Minutes.
So then, of course, there's Terry, the stepmom of it all. Oh, sorry. Then, of course, there's Terry. We've been talking about Terry this whole time. There's so much mounting strangeness. I won't even say evidence, because it's not even evidence. It's just strangeness against her, you know? The weird sects, the hitman, you know, just like what she was doing, who she was with, her weird friends, the burner phones, like all this stuff looks so bad for her. But I have to say, everyone on Reddit does not think it is Terry. They do not.
Now, is there something to be said about Terry? You know, Terry has her own biological
mm-hmm.
son.
Yes.
This is a stepson.
Yes.
Is the stepson, this is somebody as a child of divorce with many step half sisters, my own family dynamics, where sometimes, like, is this child taking up too much space? And Terry doesn't sound like, if you talk to people that are like, hey, you've known Terry, you know, what's Terry like in the last 20 years? I guarantee you some people would be like, she's weird.
Mm-hmm.
They could say that about me. They could say that about you. They could say that about anybody. But I have a feeling you might find someone to be like, yeah, Terry's always been weird.
Yeah.
And I feel like you never hear those things.
Yeah.
You never hear, because you only hear like, yeah, they're just, you know, they're normal and normal.
Yeah.
Normal,
you don't get the subtext on these. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's the motive? I don't know. It sounds like they had a contentious relation. If you were married to someone and you're like, I'm willing to hook up with this, your high school friend that I just met, you probably had a very, probably both sides, a very strange relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And would if it was her own son, I'd be like, mm-hmm. wow, that is, but a stepson would be like, possibly like, this kid is in the way. It's not even my kid. I already have a kid.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of arguments in relationships come from the child that is not theirs.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that anyone's guilty or innocent, but that is a thing.
Yes. And that's a huge motive for people who think it's Terry, is that, you know, this is not her biological child. She has an older child. She has a younger child, you know. But then a lot of people argue that in that she was so involved with his life as a teacher. And then other people, and I can't verify this because I don't have any clips of her speaking, that English was not her first language as well. So maybe there was something lost in communication along those lines, especially when you think about like the flirting with the, you know, flirting with the gardener or something like that. You know, a lot of these things can be negated maybe by not being able to adequately communicate. But that being said, it's still weird. There's still so much going on. So then I want to give you another little family development, a little extra thing here. So there's another piece of information that I was down the Reddit hole and found out that Kyren's uncle, Christian, also with a K, there's a lot of K names, Kane, Christian, Kyren, began a 6-month jail sentence just weeks after Kyren went missing, a long-running sexual abuse case in that he had sexual paraphernalia of an illegal nature. Something to consider. So Kyren Horman's paternal uncle, Christian, again, was in this long running case. It had something to do with a teenage relative. I didn't look too far into it, but there's a darker component to this too, that I would be remiss if I didn't mention, which begs the question, did his uncle have something to do with it? Also, it's strange. Weeks after he goes missing, he goes to jail for
something he was doing previously.
Yes. Yes. So, I want to put that out there. A lot of people on Reddit also believe, so there was a nearby woods next to, like literally next to the school. I say nearby, it's across the street from the school. A lot of people think that Kyren went out of the school physically, which it's a really small school next to a very large park called Forest Park, which is 5,000 acres. It's a densely wooded park, and that something happened to him in there. They allude to him doing this project on tree frogs, and maybe going out there, something caught his attention and he got into the woods, got hurt, something happened to him out there, and he was never been found. Now, to be never found in the largest case in Oregon history would be hard for me to believe personally, but that's something that people are talking about online as well. Then other people say that maybe it was something medical. Says one Redditor, Terry was apparently taking Kyren to a neurologist about an epilepsy diagnosis. A lot of people think that's ridiculous because they'd never seen him have a seizure, but people think that maybe he had some kind of medical condition that came to a head around that time. Again, that would mean that he'd have to be somewhere undetected in order for that to happen, but that's also what people are discussing. And I want to say again, most people do not think that it's Terry who did this. They think that someone else came in and she got the heat for it, but it's very hard to ignore all of these pieces of information. So I want to say a lot of people on Reddit do not think it's Terry, and they go to bat for her, and they talk a lot about how her reactions were misconstrued in the media. It's very hard to ignore all of this information about her as well. I would be so curious to learn more, to get even deeper in the case. Again, there's this great Redditor who goes so deep, and they're very anti-Terry did it. But all in all, it's a heartbreaking mystery that remains unsolved.